Okay, so we'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. Welcome to our village board meeting, it's September 12th. It's 7:04, so if I can ask the clerk to please take the roll call.
Trustee Bachner.
Here.
Trustee Gillis.
Here.
Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Brennan.
Here.
Trustee Johnson.
Here.
Trustee O'Connell.
Here.
President Medusi.
Here. Thank you. If we can all stand to say the Pledge of Allegiance.
The flag of the United States of America, Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All right, so we have a few. Maybe we can just, oh my, there's no subject. So Lorraine, well, the first one is, yeah, Lorraine. So you just have general comments. So if you don't mind, come to the podium. There you go.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I live at 1142 Forest Avenue. That's the second house in from a division right across the street to the entrance to Dominican. I've lived there for 32 years. I know the village has changed quite a bit over that time period. But I'll tell you what the straw was that broke the camel's back for me. Mm-hmm. Lucy. Lucy's a black lab that got hit on, yeah. And she called the police after the dog was hit. But, you know, I have a beautiful patio in the front of my house. I love to read there. What I don't like and what I'm asking for action on, we all know that Division is used as a thoroughfare instead of North Avenue. People to go west to the suburbs. They go over at Thatcher. Augusta is used that way too. Lucy the dog was hit this time, and there was a child not that long ago on Augusta that was hit a couple years, it may be. They have a problem there too, just like we do on Division. What's changed is this. There's a lot more speeding. There are cars and motorcycles that drive by, and the sound is so, I mean, I could do a dance party on my patio. It is so loud. The mufflers, just yesterday, there was a car that swooshed right off of Division, parked by my driveway, and was there for at least half hour, 45 minutes. I don't know who's in that car, and it's bothersome because this was a junk car. It was a flat light gray and a flat dark gray sedan. It was sitting there and sitting there. Now, when I first moved in to River Forest, I was broken into twice. The police were very helpful. They always have been. However, sometimes living alone, you don't feel that comfortable. So who was there? The car started up. No muffler. None. Zoomed south on Forest. The same cars go by. The same motorcycle. Last year it was a yellow motorcycle. They either work at Dominican, go to Dominican, or are just using this as a thoroughfare. It's the same cars. So I say that we have a problem there, probably on more than one street going east and west. And I say that something needs to be done because I know I cross that street all the time with my dog, you know, to take the nice big Dominican walk. I have to wait forever before anyone will stop. I thought it was the law that you stop at an intersection where it's designated with lines. people don't seem to abide by that. Putting up the signs that say, your speed is 62 miles an hour. Oh, well, interesting information. It doesn't do anything. So things that could do something that I don't necessarily like, but they could do something, and innovative thinking could maybe do more. I appreciate all the new stop signs. That's great. That helps. What about speed bumps? I use that street all the time. I don't care if I go slower. You know, if that could save a kid, if that could save a dog, wouldn't it be worth it? What about what we did on Chicago Avenue? But most of all, the police need to be there sneakily and not being obvious, perhaps. Because I'd like to catch some of these people who every single day have cars that are much too loud, have music that's much too loud. So with that, I am asking you, please,
yep,
do something. Don't let this continue, because it will continue and it will get worse.
Yeah.
And maybe, I don't know, maybe we could do something that reroutes the east-west traffic,
mm-hmm,
from through our town back to North Avenue, back to the streets, back to the streets that are intended to have that kind of traffic. We're a neighborhood. So thank you for listening.
Thank you, Lorraine. And just one thing, and
sure,
again, thank you for all the input. There, I'm not sure you're aware of, but if you're not, you should be. There is a village-wide traffic study going on right now,
mm-hmm,
to look at most of what you just said, not the police,
yeah,
side of the thing, but the traffic flow, the traffic,
mm-hmm,
direction, trying to stop the cut-throughs, using things like cul-de-sacs and speed bumps and cutouts and all the things that could calm traffic.
Mm-hmm.
I really encourage you to go to that meeting. It's on the 21st, right, Jeff? Remember, what are we?
So the Northeast Quadrant study is on the 21st. We're still finishing up the RFP for the full study.
That's not on the agenda?
The 21st
only
study.
I thought there was going to be, we're going to do truck lines and.
That request was specific to the North Quadrant,
okay,
and related to that study. So we're still working through the negotiating the scope and the,
mm-hmm,
budget with the consultants for the village-wide study. So that will begin very shortly, but
okay,
the next traffic and safety will just quadrant. As part of the village-wide study, we will have a survey that goes out. So,
mm-hmm,
residents, business owners around town can participate in, like we've done, safe walking routes to school and the commuter parking.
Right. Well, good.
Okay.
So
I noted it.
Yep. Okay. Very good. And just
right,
keep notice of it. And but we acknowledge your point of view, and we acknowledge your
mm-hmm,
observation, because
mm-hmm,
not alone. So we're going to try to come up with some creative ways of calming traffic and moving
right,
traffic to where, you know, it's supposed to be. Thank
and
you.
And I also volunteer,
yep,
to help in any way,
yep,
I could.
Please,
as a researcher and a new product developer.
Oh, super.
So.
Yeah, keep your eyes open for, you know, our meetings and our surveys and our newsletter. If you don't get it, please sign up for the newsletter, because that's where all the information is. But, yeah, we want your input.
Okay.
Yeah,
thank you.
For sure. Thank you, Lauren. That's subject.
No comment.
Oh, later. Okay, because you didn't have a subject line,
yeah,
so no worries. And then we have Janet and Curtis. Do you mind if we wait until we get to your section? And then Steve, same thing, right? Okay, very good. So that kind of concludes the general conversation. So we'll move on to the elected officials.
Of course, thanks. I'd like to start with a land acknowledgement. So, as we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on lands that was by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We will remember our nation's history, gather the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse live and gather. I wanted to mention lemonade and the event that happened yesterday, and I know there was so much rain, So if you didn't get out there, you can still donate online on their website. And then I want to acknowledge that today is National Police Woman Day. So to all our police women and those who are supportive of that, thank you for your service. And then wanted to just give a general update for the DEI advisory group. We're in the middle of bids right now, and so still in that process, right, looking to get to our next phase of the final.
Very good. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Just good evening, everyone, and also congratulations, Kathy, for your service as the president of IML. I'm corner for, I'm not sure, always a great event to go. I plan to go to.
Reiterate comments that this week, and Lemonade also, which, you know, persevered with the rain, and to thank the village for everything they did to help out with fixing a sign on Lemonade Place, which was then featured prominently in some of the press, and dropping off waste stations and everything that the village does, and our fire department in particular, who was there yesterday. Very moving presentation. Big part of the event. And following up on Eric, the website to go to donate is 9-11lemonade.com. I missed the last meeting. I was bringing my daughter back to college and go blue.
Yeah.
And
I don't know
around here.
Do we have a quorum over there for blue?
I did hear, I did listen to the meeting, and I heard the resident concerns about what's going on at Lake and Lathrop, and the concerns about whether they're on target with the work that's being done, that they didn't see anything happening over there, and sidewalks being, you know, and messy and maybe dangerous. So I'm sure
yep.
we're working on that.
Yep.
But I did go to the, because I listened to that, I went to the website to look at the update on the schedule. And honestly, it was a little confusing to me. It looks like as of May 2022, which was a couple months ago, they were supposed to be complete with their underground work. Sure doesn't look like they are. And then there's something, the most recent update is August 18th. The tree removal work is underway. And I didn't see any trees. Are they?
There were trees on there.
So are they, they're... Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think it's going to be important that we don't get into the same situation that we got into before with this developer, and I have a sneaking feeling that that's where we're going, and I don't want us to get stuck so that they're far behind, and the only thing that we can do is again give another extension. I just don't want to be in that position sitting in this chair. And I'd like to ask that they come back to our meetings and give us monthly updates. I think our residents deserve that, and I think that we need to ask for that on their behalf.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we have an issue with that. I mean,
can we ask them? I will ask them. Can the village ask them?
I mean,
it may be better
coming from
Brian.
We can certainly ask them. I mean, we got to understand that they, you know, went through the process. They got their permit. We can micromanage them, but I don't know if that. I mean, but getting updates, I think, is important.
I don't consider this to be micromanagement. I think this is a very unusual situation that we have with this property and this developer. If we look at all the other development that's gone on around River Forest, much of which was permitted after this one was and completed before this one has even done the underground. So I don't think this is a typical situation.
I don't think anybody would disagree with that. I'm just saying in general, you know, we don't want to be treating one developer different than the other. But I understand and we agree. I mean, we all agree that, you know, we want this developed. So I don't think it's inappropriate to ask them to come once a month, you know, give us updates as appropriate. So, but I don't know if you've got any further updates. I know quite a bit of work after the last board meeting.
We have since the last board meeting, and actually even prior to that. There was a good period of time where we were getting active, regular information, and there was progress that was being made. As some of you know, there was a strike that took place that impacted aggregate deliverables, and that caused an impact for the developer. As well, there was a hang-up because NICOR needed to abandon a line that was on the property. So they were a little subjected to those. That being said, we have put them on notice that, you know, the strike is over. Aggregate is available. You will have noticed there is some work that it did start last
yep.
week, and they've expressed that they expect to be in earnest this week on site. Now, that being said, we put them on notice. They have until October the 3rd in order to respond to what we've noticed them upon.
Well, you said it wasn't notice. It wasn't just that was brought to our attention that we, you know, like the sidewalk and cleanliness of the development, which is what is under our purview. And we took that to heart, last time. And, you know, there are things that we in the village can do that clean as possible. So that's what you're referring to.
That's correct.
You know, I mean, we're not their project manager, but we do want to make sure that the project is clean and safe for our either walk the sidewalk. Those are the things that we're also staying on top of, which I think. But we can certainly ask them to come in once a month to be updates. And we will continue to update our website. Need that. I'm sure they were out there. But
underground work was supposed to be completed by May 2020.
I'll have to follow up, but there was still a question on the south foundation wall that needed to, there was a easement question that needed. The rest of the work is
doesn't mean we shouldn't have updates, but our job right now is to make sure we'll take it from there.
I just have a couple of dittos. The first one is Therese, I also will be attending the IML next week, so I'm excited about that. Then I'll move over to Erica. My next ditto is for her regarding DEI. Just by way of background, we've had, we did submit an RFP, and we had RFPs from all across the country, 16, right? And we're currently going through those and actually talking to these individuals and companies. And the one thing that, you know, we're kind of proud of is that we talk about, you know, why these applied for this RFP. And they said that they're just excited about our community, that they see a community that's moving in the right direction, has a lot of diverse opinions, which, you know, most people feel is important. And then just has a desire to get it right. And so, you know, we're kind of proud of not only the product we're putting out, but the product that the community is putting out across the country, and people can see that, and they see what we're doing in sustainability, and they see which way we're going, and they see that this is a community that really wants to get it right. So kudos to the community.
Congratulations to both the promoters on the lemonade stand. They did a great job again. It was kind of timing was great because the rain really let up and, you know, really gave them the opportunity to get a lot of people out there. There were a lot of umbrellas in hand. So that was good to hear. And again, Kathy, congratulations on this weekend and your appointment with IML. I know how important that is for not only our community, but for a lot of communities throughout our state. The last two items I have are just kind of literally housekeeping items. Yesterday, as before the lemonade stand, when it was raining, many of the streets were flooded with the leaves coming down. We'd ask the residents to just take a couple of minutes, if they know rain is coming, is to make sure that the catch basins are clear, and so we don't have flooding throughout the community. And it also keeps our public works folks at home as opposed to on the street. So on a Sunday. And secondly, just want to remind residents that their garbage, primarily bulk items, should not be put out on the streets, you know, prior to their garbage, the night before their garbage. Again, yesterday was a good indication. There's a couple of couches out there that I'm sure are going to weigh about 50 more pounds than they did before the rain came yesterday. And just generally, it just kind of takes away from the character of our neighborhoods. And it's just the right thing to do. So if people could cooperate on those two things, again, just some nice things to make our community a better place to live. Thanks.
Just a few things. So, yes, the lemonade was wonderful and enjoyable. And thank you for our police department and our fire department, including Chief Gardner and Kevin for being fire marshal for being there and providing appropriate kind of support for 9/11. And congratulations to the two charities. They are great charities, and I'm glad Lemonade picked them. We also had Village of River Forest had another sponsored great event, but it, around the table, we didn't really hear much about it. It was our food truck rally, and it's one of the biggest events in River Forest that the Village and the Park District and Rotary come together and, have a great kind of a end of summer, if you will, festival for our residents and their children. And it's just wonderful. And next year, we hope to have a bigger and better out because it really was a great day and great fun. I also attended a dinner with the administrator of the Federal Transit Authority, Nuria Fernandez. And many other key transportation folks like Dorval Carter, who is the president of the CTA, the chairman of the CTA, and others from PACE and Petra. So it was great to greet and meet these folks because we have lots of transportation needs in River Forest. We have not only the CTA, we have the Metro, the PACE, and of course just general infrastructure. And with the Biden administration passing the largest infrastructure bill in recent time, we want to make sure we also have our fair share of some of that grant money. So it was a great meeting, and it was a great networking meeting for us. I also want to say thanks to the DI committee for moving our moving that forward in terms of the finding that consultant, because I think it's bringing this all together and gel. And then I was interviewed with the Dominican University today. They are going to, they're 100 years in River Forest, so they're putting together a kind of a celebration of being in River Forest for 100 years. And, you know, that's kind of an interesting, daunting thing. If you think about it, it's, you know, we're 130-year-old community, and they've been here probably longer than many, many, many folks. So glad to have them as a partner here in River Forest. And that's it. Other than thank you for all the nice words on the Illinois Municipal League conference, which is this weekend. It starts Wednesday night and then moves into all the way through Saturday evening. And it is a sort of big thing because the Illinois Municipal League is a major league that
put together education, advocacy, and advocate for us in Springfield. And that's really important for our size of a municipality because we want to be heard. And the IML allows us to be heard in a big way in Springfield and also in the federal level. So I'm very proud and flattered and honored to be the next president of that league. It's roughly 1,300 municipalities. Almost all municipalities in Illinois have joined the league. So it's pretty powerful. I'm looking forward to taking on that role. That's all I have. So we'll move on to the consent agenda. I can get a motion to approve consent agenda A through G.
Motion to approve consent agenda items A through G.
Second.
Any comments on the consent? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to please read the consent agenda and then take a vote.
Excuse me. Consent agenda A, Village Board of Trustee meeting minutes, August 22nd, 2022. B, a right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement for an irrigation system in the public right-of-way with the property owners at 610 through 612 William Street. C, a right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement for an irrigation system in the public right-of-way with the property owners at 946 Clinton Place. D, a right-of-way encroachment waiver and irrigation system in the public right-of-way with the property owners at 558 Forest Avenue. E, monthly department reports. F, accounts payable, August 2022, $1,647,009.53. G, Village Administrator's Report. C. Gillis?
Yes.
Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Okay, we'll move on to item seven. And our first is the so if I can get a motion and a second to approve the ordinance granting the requested variation for 934 Park Avenue.
A motion to approve an ordinance granting the requested variation to section 10-9-5 of the zoning ordinance at 934 Park Avenue.
Mm-hmm. Second.
Okay, very good. Okay, Janet and Chris, I know you're here, Steve, are you the architect? Okay. So if you want to, I mean, before we take any questions from the trustees, if you just want to, like, tell us a little bit about your project?
Of course.
And why the variance, probably.
Yeah. Cool to have slides up for sure.
Will you tell me? That help you?
I think it will. Good evening, and for the record, I'm Steve Ronowitz of Studio R Architecture, representing the Curtis and Janet Howig at 934 Park for a variation, for an FAR variation. Well, that's getting loaded out.
Sure.
But just go through the basics of why we're here. So the Howigs have lived at 934 Park for almost three decades. And they live in an 1895 Victorian old house that they've maintained and in its original state, pretty much, because they've sort of endeavored to keep it that way. It's a beautiful house, but it's very tall. And there are two houses on the block. They're kind of brother and sister, if you will, a couple addresses apart. So the issue is that this beautiful old tall Victorian house I have you pull up A11 please. So this beautiful old Victorian house is tall and it's the one right in the middle of the street line photo there. registering property. It obviously is the one that looks just like it on the end. So, yeah, so they've got this tall old house. The third floor was built out when they bought the house 27 years ago? 29 years ago. The third floor was built out when they bought it. And they've raised their kids, and they'd like to stay in the house, sort of age in place, if you will, and they love the community. But the attic of the house is it's built out, and it's taking up the available area that they would have to sort of alter their house. You can pay attention to the two aerial site photos. And you take a look at the houses. They're neighbors to the north and south. I'm looking at drawing number one right now. Drawing number one shows the aerial view of their house and its footprint relative to the footprint of their neighbors to the north and south. And you can see neighbor to the south extends back about 35 feet beyond the back of their house. Now, of course, that house is a two-story house. It's not an old Victorian. It's built later. And the house to the north extends 25 feet past their house. So Janet and Curtis, they would sort of finally like to solve the problem of having a new kitchen. So they have this sort of old house with a grand foyer and sort of some grand spaces in the front part of the house. In the back part of the house, they have a chimney and a secondary stair and all sorts of things that are clogging up the back of the house. And so we're trying to solve that problem for them. Currently, their master bedroom faces the street. That's the largest room in the house on the second floor. So they have a little tiny master bath, and their master bedroom faces the street. Love to enjoy their backyard, but at the moment, it's sort of all clogged up with stuff in the back. And without completely destroying the original character of the house, to sort of retool this whole house, what they'd like to do is tear off an existing floor, sort of an ad hoc laundry room. It was a porch. It was built over a porch, and it's really not. Yeah, and it's just not in character with the house at all. So what we're proposing is an addition off the back. The two-story addition, and the addition is 17 feet. 17 feet doesn't even align with the north neighbor or the south neighbor. And then there's a little piece that sticks out, another 8 feet, which is part of a screen porch. The basics of the reason why we're here. So the variance is essentially covering the area that's currently occupied by their attic. Don't use. That maybe I'll just, if you guys would like to say anything, or if you could open up some questions, maybe.
It, unless you have anything you want to add,
well,
or, yep.
I would clarify
yep.
that. Off the back floor. That's 7 of the feet or. Really like more into the yard. It's already two-story.
Right. Simple. Couldn't build that house. The oldest house is north, River Forest, north of Chicago.
Do you mind if you go to, do you,
sure.
when people
I'm sorry.
Listen to
Our
the,
problem simple
yeah.
is the fact we own one of the oldest houses north of Chicago Avenue in River Forest. You couldn't build a house that high today. Just couldn't. But they did for all sorts of reasons, because heat rose and all those sorts of things. But you didn't have kind of sprawling houses back then. So we got square footage, but not a place we can use it. I mean, I'm getting older, and chucking to the third floor ain't the best answer for me. And, you know, the truth is that in the modern world, people want to have usable space on the first floor. So, you know, when you compare it to what's around us, we're really not, you know, going any bigger or anything like that. We just are being pushed into this situation because the amount of square footage on that, largely unusual for us anyways, third floor, puts us out of this floor area.
Right.
And that's what really what's going on.
I think that's the differentiator going here, is that it's, you've got usable space. It's not, and I just want to make sure that the trustees understand that the height of that home is part of it. It's not usable.
Yeah, well, it's not livable? It's livable. You just have to get there. I mean, you know, you got, I think it's 45 stairs, or, you know, four, maybe that's wrong, 45 stairs in the basement up. I've counted them enough times. I think it's, you know, 38 or something to get up there. And, you know, it's a long way. So, I mean, you're not going to have your kitchen and everything on the third floor. You're going to have all of your usable stuff. And, you know, I think that we're just trying to take an old house and make it something that in River Forest people can use. Because what's going to happen if they can't do that, we're not going to do it. But somebody's going to say, eh, you know, we need a fancy house. And you take those houses or in modern times. You know, I love that house, and I just want to make it something that we can live in, ideally for the rest of our lives, and then somebody else comes and looks at it and says, hey, it's a pretty nice house, which you see all over the village and all over our area. It's just, you know, we can't make it work, and we'll just, but it's really about, you know, somebody said, what's my hardship? My usable space is on the third floor, and I'm getting old, and getting there is kind of tough these days. So, and you beat, but the kids were good when they were in, gone, so, you know, I don't really have afraid of a house. All right, that's kind of our situation.
I would also add that our neighbors, both to the north and south, so our immediate neighbors that you see pictures of, have written letters supporting this variance. They're in favor of it, and you know, we've talked to them, and you know, it's like they see that the addition is helping them, you know, in terms of, you know, going to make our house nicer, and you know, in that way make their property value more. So you know, I think that's another thing to consider. Last thing is, you know, one block away from us, we've seen four historic houses, including one, Drummond, torn down. So I think there is a real risk if you don't let people modernize their homes so that they are what our community, what our neighborhood would expect for neighborhood, that, you know, you're going to see a lot of first torn down.
Neighbor to the north, there's no window for them to see it. And the neighbor to the south, they got one window that's partly obstructed. So there's, you know, if you just look at how far,
there's a big bush.
Yeah. There's a big, and it's obstructed by a bush now. So he never looks out the window. So my point is that there's not, if you look at where we're at, everybody's behind, you know, their houses, we're looking, we're kind of, look out our back window and we see walls. We see walls.
Any questions from the trustees?
I just have a couple comments, actually. First off, there's a lot of homes in River Forest where the third floor is not counted against their square footage. And they're actually kind of adversely affected by that. Secondly, on that block, I think the lots run 220 deep. Plenty of space. Not as if they're eating up a backyard. It's really tough. So I would urge you. So third floor square footage, it goes against how much square footage you're allotted, based on the plat that you passed on. A lot of houses that have third floor attics that have now become living space, it hasn't been added to it. And they've just sort of gone under the radar, so to speak.
A couple of questions. Mm-hmm. You mentioned historic homes next door, down the block, et cetera. Is your home part of the historic homes?
It's
district. Okay.
Guidebook to River Forest architecture.
Okay. Yeah,
It's considered significant.
Doesn't mean it's not historic, but it's not on the list.
Whatever.
Are you sure, man?
Right. You think
Dan Sager hasn't found him?
Yeah, I'm surprised.
You think that it would be. I mean,
I think our sister house is.
The one next door? Well, how about the one that's one?
Yeah, the other one, the large one.
Yeah.
Those were built, according to this, was built by a brother and sister or brother and brother-in-law in 1895 at the same time. So
okay.
We're either second or third, depending upon which got,
you know. Well, actually,
would you consider?
Well, they were the first.
They were the first.
And that was in 1894, and then these two were built the same year. So I don't know who finished first, but we were either second or third. And I think that one is on, and I a lot of times this is who comes out and says, I want my house.
I think about 10 years ago, 11 years, well, maybe more, maybe 13, 14 years when we created the historic preservation for all of our time. And I think right after that, they were doing a survey of both historic and those that are significant, which I.
Okay. Do you remind them of what happens and like why they would want to do
being a significant property?
Yeah.
Well, I think what you're just saying right now. I mean, you don't want it torn down, right? You prefer not to have it torn down.
Right.
Certainly, a landmark would help with that, but landmark also comes with a lot of restrictions. But you certainly want to consider possibly making a significant home, which doesn't really restrict you in any way.
Well,
it just kind of puts you in a category that hopefully is good for you and the community because it says this home has significance, both time significance and maybe architectural significance, which, you know, is we are here in River Forest. We really pride ourselves on the homes that are on that list. So that's what I would encourage you to consider. And then your point is really more, I think, poignant in that we don't want it torn down because it is on that list.
I
don't want any home torn down.
I've owned four homes.
Oh, no.
Of the four I've been involved with, this is.
Your home is older than mine. Put it that way. And all I'm saying is.
All the houses I've been involved with, you know, all of, except for one, were built in the 19th century, you know, that I've up in and everything. So. Old homes.
When was this home built? 1800?
95.
Yeah. I mean, that would make it a significant property under our criteria.
Yeah.
All it means is that.
And to be honest,
what you're
saying.
Know,
we've just been living. We've been just, you know, last thing I need to worry about was, why are we doing this now? I mean, because this is, you know, years out, whatever they. A lot of times, you know, raise. Homes were not immediate radar of.
Yeah, but it seems like you've taken very do the work that you've done.
I have one more question.
Yep.
Sure.
And please don't be shocked with the question. since your architect is here. Other than put aside the issue of cosmetically pleasing, if you were to just comply and that attic portion, since you're not using it, would there be another way to remove it or to make it to comply? And if you, the answer is yes, what would that result, meaning what are the benefits and or detriments, including costs? And one thing I'm thinking of, just so you know, is since it is an older home, is that going to cause or a safety issue in the integrity of the building or the structure? I know, I love these. That's a lawyer question. I'm sorry.
I was a lawyer. So they have about 150 feet to work with. All that's left, which is amazing when you look at drawing number one, and you look at the footprint of their house, and you look at the rest of the lot, and you say to yourself, any person would look at that and say, well, they have plenty of room to build. No, they don't. They've got 150 square feet, less than this desk area built. So the answer is they've had multiple design professionals, multiple design professionals working on this house over the years, trying to get a new kitchen and trying to solve some of the Rubik's Cube equations of this house. If you all took a tour of the house, it would be very clear that the house doesn't engage the backyard at all. They've got this 220 feet going back. You don't see it. You don't see it from inside the house. You actually have to go outside the house. Chimneys and stairways and all sorts of things. So you'd really have to retool the inside of this house and rip this 1895 part, replan it, trying to solve the problem. Then you've destroyed a piece of history. And I would say it would be cheaper and easier to knock it down and build a new house. Not that that would be my solution. That would be the more cost-effective solution. So it's a challenging problem to deal with. And I don't know if I'm effectively answering your question, but it's kind of a complicated one. There's this, which is the reason why we're here.
Yep.
So. Yeah.
That's why I said, not that it's not important, because medical is that issue.
Yeah.
That I was looking more for the issues of safety, the structure.
You could scrape off the gable roof and put a flat roof on this house and build all the way back.
No.
But, you wouldn't want to do
One more thing I'd like to note. Isn't the square footage above your garage also factored into this?
That is also factored
that's
in.
That's causing it to
They've sort of built a replica garage to what was a barn. There was a barn back there.
Okay.
So, yes, that's factoring into it as well. Hope I answered your question.
Yep.
Yes, you did, and thank you.
So, when I first looked at this, I really struggled with it because I went back and I looked at our history, and I'm glad we look at these on a case by case. As late as last night, I drove by the house and I was like, "Oh my God, this thing is massive!" And then Trustee Gillis and I were speaking, and she said, "You got to look at the overview on it. And when you look at the aerial view on it, it really tells kind of a different story." And that, you know, I thought the impact on the neighbors was going to be much greater than it appears to be. And, you know, the comment I made was, you know, it's a massive house, but it looked massive on a cold, Sunday night or whatever. But, you know, these, and again, the aerial view, makes me more comfortable that, it's not going to be a big impact. And then the only other part of this is, again, we look at this on a case-by-case basis, and this is by far the largest one that we're going to address. Right. And, we need to make sure that when we do this, that it's, I appreciate the fact that your neighbors and other neighbors who've sent letters in are in favor of this, but we have to look at this in the context of our whole community. And so I think when these things come up, I think we needed to have more conversation and more engagement from the community in terms of, how much, again, we're looking at each one of these individually, how much do we want to give on each one of these, and how's that going to impact the character of our community? So, looking at this and kind of looking at, again, each case individually, I think this is probably something that makes a lot of sense for us in our community.
Oh, that's fine.
I was just going to say the fact that
that shouldn't be our driving
the character of our
Okay. Is anybody?
Yeah,
okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, mine's going to be a longer list. The reason I'm saying that is I was one of the individuals who denied one of the other requests that are listed on that chart that we have of what we approved. The concern is that although they were asking for something higher than what you were asking in terms of a deviation or variance, but one of the concerns I had is just overall, you know, and I know we say it's by case by case, but still, people apply, they're going to run, you did it for so-and-so and you did it for so-and-so. So I'm always looking at what's so unique about every case and whether we can justify it. So I had that concern. And then I also looked at a couple things. Number one, the other thing is usually I also do give deference to our commissions or our zoning board. So I know they do a lengthier examination of what we do here, and that's not to say what we do here is not important, but I did notice, and it was a uniform approval, a recommendation to approve it. The other thing that I do is I do agree that, although it's Trustee Bachner, that even though letters are not the key driving force, I think it does help to have the letters to make sure the residents aren't upset with that, because some of these other properties, we did have residents who came out and didn't like it or were against it impolitely. So that's the other issue. The fact that I did notice too that the potential impact of how the property looks, and thank you for the aerial site visuals. I thought at least that helped me. I'm assuming it helped some of the other trustees. Looking at how the back of the property is not as extended. I'm also looking at the fact that you do have more land that's far beyond. So even if you, based on the extension you're talking about, probably it doesn't even exceed what the your two neighbors have, as if I'm looking at that correctly.
That's correct.
So, okay. So then, so I guess what I'm saying that based on all these other items that are, I say, in your favor, and the last item too, that it, although it's not a historic district acknowledged property, it still looks and captures that feeling. And so I guess what I'm saying is I'm in favor of granting it for all the reasons I mentioned above.
Well, I just want to say one thing. I just want to thank you for investing in your home,
yeah,
and rather than go the easy route, which is to tear it down. I think we do need to retain the historic integrity of our community, because that survey that was done years ago does, I actually went to the cultural center downtown with an architect at the building I worked at, Lara Burnett. She wanted me to go because she was just amazed at the diversity of architecture in our town, so we just need to maintain that. So thank you very much.
I just wanted to say thank you. Thank you for your.
Or we'll take the vote first.
Yeah, well,
then you might
don't jump
take
again.
I still want to thank you for your questions. I mean,
you have a foot over there.
Yeah.
Wait,
that's right.
You can say that soon.
Well, I always try to shoot for the bullseye of reasonable, and
no,
for me this fit that argument because the bullseye of reasonable.
Trustee Johnson. Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Bachner.
Yes, and I really would like to see that.
We'll add that to the
noted
record.
Yeah.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Well, now that it's approved, yeah, thank you so much. And I would ask you to take Trustee Bachner's comment,
yeah,
seriously. You know, it's up to you, but it's something that we really value when our homes are considered significant. Also, just to let you know, I know back in when we did do the FAR, it was mostly kind of a response to what was happening in Hinsdale, where the teardowns were going and the big mansions were going up, no difference to McDonald's. But, and so it was kind of in a... I only had a McMuffin, that would have been great. That was the whole you know, but like you said, there's so many reasons to look at these things individually. So, but, you know, to Bob O'Connell's point, too, we're just trying to make sure that from a community-wise, we keep our – you're doing that, and we appreciate it.
I've seen
– yeah.
You know.
Now you know. So, but it's all good, and I think this is going to be beautiful. So thank you so much.
All right,
I really appreciate
much.
It.
Thank
you. Right,
thank you.
Okay, so up next, an off-street parking variation. So if I can get
I move to approve the ordinance granting the request of variations to Section 10-9-8 of the zoning ordinance at 138 Keystone Avenue.
Okay, would
Hello, everybody. I'm here with my husband, Stuart, or Stu, and we are seeking a variance to the off-street parking provision so we can tear down our old garage on our current property, our house property, and not replace it due to hardship of the fact that we already have a garage. It just happens to exist on the property that we own right next door. We very uniquely own right next door, whereby a second garage would, one, be extremely expensive in any year, but most certainly in the current climate. And two, add further and unnecessary buildings to the property, thus removing natural spaces, something that's very important to us, to our neighbors, and we know the village at large. Stepping back a bit for some background, we bought the house 10 years ago, and when we bought it, we knew, like, from the start that we'd have to tear down the garage. The question was just always, where the heck are we going to rebuild the garage? Mm-hmm. The reality of young children, one who's here, and expenses of just trying to figure that out. We bought the property right next to us 3.5 years ago with the intent of preserving the green space and really opening up the backyard, and ultimately the long-term intent of combining the properties. The house next to us is a very, very small house that we rent out as a rental property. It's a tiny little place. The property across the way is another, we have a large Victorian, and the kind of next house over is a large Victorian. So we're trying to also we bought this property to avoid having someone come in and put a giant house in between these two, really not formally historic, or kind of Victorian homes. When we bought the property right next door to us, it became very clear that rather than rebuild our garage on our house property, we could put it on the property next to us, build a three-car garage that would accommodate enclosed parking for both us and our very small rental house. Again, while increasing the green space, they'll open up the backyard. Knowing that variances are all about precedent, you guys just spoke a lot about that a little while ago, you know, I want to reinforce that we are, again, in a really unique situation of owning the property right next door. I don't think it's very easy to replicate that. Not many will do it. As well, our intent is for the long term. We purchased our 135-year-old Victorian home as our forever home. We put a lot of work into restoring and reviving it. We won a historic preservation award on it. And part of that kind of reviving it is not just about the house, but about bringing the kind of the yard back. I mean, historically, the property that we own next door was actually the yard of our neighbors. So just kind of really, again, opening up the yard space in general. You know, to address the provision in question, we have off-street parking in spades. This is our newly built three-car garage. We built it to match our home, again, long-term focus here, so it looks like a garage that should actually fit with our house. Three enclosed parking spaces for both us and our renter next door. If you click forward, there is plenty of spaces in the garage, and then click forward on the garage pad right in front of it to park, as well. If you click again, we actually have a double driveway between the two houses, so there's ample parking, enclosed and open. While we know that the village doesn't actually require people to use the garages, and many people in the village don't use their garages for parking, we always park in the garage. We're not a big fan of the parking lot look and feel. We built the three-car garage specifically so that we could put all the cars in the garage. Also wanted to share some latest photos of the garage that sits on our property that we want to take down. If you can click forward, please. It is extremely, by the way, dilapidated. Mm-hmm. You can
quick through this. The roof is sagging. The shingles are crumbling. I have to clean them up every single day. There's bare in certain spots. We had to remove the windows as they were falling apart. The bottom section of our service door fell off like 3 days ago, or 3 weeks ago, pardon me. My dog uses it. It's just a mess. It's an eyesore and a dangerous, you know, at this point, to say the least. We've had a contractor who's done a lot of work on our home, and he's like, for a long time, not like, you guys should not be using this thing. So, yeah, at this point, we're moving everything over to the newly built garage that we've finished up. We want to remove it and put in lawn, the plant. Like, so remove it, take it out, put in grass, space for us to enjoy. We've got a ton of kids in the block, like 30 kids in the block that gather in our yard consistently. We do outdoor movie nights all the time. So the plan is to really open it up. Also, open it up so that our neighbors can have a better view, frankly, so that they aren't looking into garages in general. We positioned the new garage off to the side so that people aren't looking into garages or any structure. So, you know, all of our neighbors have signed off on this. It would be removing it and not replacing it would be a positive change for the community. Finally, another important note is that the village building official has acknowledged that the village does not make it a practice of requiring that every fallen garage be replaced. So garages have fallen down for one reason or the other in the village, and they have not always been replaced when they have come down. So considering that ours is about to fall down with any strong wind or kind of snow, isn't it better to take it down safely, avoid injury to one of my kids or someone else's? And kind of the question of, like, why do we have to replace ours if others have not been replaced? And again, if ultimately we are doing it to give more green space, more natural space to the village, and bettering the community at large. So kindly ask that you consider and approve.
Great, thank you. We also have it in our package.
Great.
It's good to see it in color, though.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Yeah.
New black and white. Is that the garage?
Wasn't sure. No.
So. Any questions?
Could just clarify the variance requested. Is that?
So what the variance?
Yeah.
So they just they own the house that's blue and beautiful, and they bought the property next door.
Right. Yeah.
And this is. And by our ordinance use. A garage. Driveway doesn't. Really.
Yeah.
Comment.
Yeah, but.
That's,
it's, yeah, Cliff Raddatz had said it, that if garages. Oh, wait, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay, but I'm just curious because I've never heard of that phrase, frankly.
Yeah, I didn't either.
That was news to me, too.
So, yeah, if you take down a garage, you're
Cliff, are you,
interpreting
your church. So, yeah, please, that would be an, just to understand it.
Yeah.
The ordinance is written, no house shall be constructed. Practice. If somebody require them to have a plan in motion to replace those enclosed, and the applicant had challenged that a year ago with the zoning board, confirmed that while the ordinance is not written to say that you have to, that it was, in their minds, logical that a plan to demolish the enclosed parking needed to have this process to maintain. Otherwise, people could at random say, well, I bought this house, but for whatever reasons, I don't like my enclosed way.
Right.
And this has been over the years. And that being said, you know, you apply for a permit, rules. There are some things that happen by accident. You get a big snowfall in the roof cave, or there's a fire, or you know, whatever. There's a number of ways that and in those there's no process that has been started. Clean it up, they take it away. And we don't go door to door saying, gee, I now have a zoning violation. Here's a nice they have planned it. So, I mean, there is this dichotomy of outcomes there. You started the process to, you know, apply for a permit to demolish a garage, then you have to replace it. On the other hand, if Mother Nature does it for you, that's the instance.
But can I ask, when you say we don't chase them, it's because we don't do it, or because you're saying we don't have to do it?
It's a matter of, are you proactively or reactively?
Well, I'm hoping we're proactively enforcing the code. I guess I would associate that as if, let's assume, I have a vehicle sticker, and I'm on the expressway, and a rock breaks, which has happened twice so far, on my windshield. And that was Mother Nature, whatever. Do I need to replace and buy another sticker or replace it? Or can I just drive now in River Forest without a sticker? I use the same analogy. I assume that because we need a village vehicle permit, I'm going to get a new permit. So I guess if there's an obligation to build, and I take it a garage, that even though Mother Nature is mean sometimes, you have to replace it. I don't think you have to say that. But
that's not this case.
Well, no, but I'm just saying that. But we're on the record. I don't want people to think that because, things happen. You can get away with something.
Yeah,
but,
very good. Thank you, Brett.
Okay.
I guess my question was, you know, in thinking about this as two separate properties, although you own the, you're not requesting an easement or anything into that second yard, so that if you were to sell that rental property, technically, you would be without a garage immediately unless you applied for some type of easement. Understanding that.
Immediately, yes. Our plan is to combine the properties, but basically you can see the garage that we built. It's built to match our house specifically. That shows the long-term commitment that we're in to the properties together. We're doing this in steps. In all honesty, and figure this is the easier first step, that while our kids are still young, can enjoy the yard, the easier thing to go about.
So I had a couple questions. So first of all, maybe I just missed it. I never read that you contemplate combining these properties. So is that something that?
It's in the plans. Figured this would be the faster first step to do.
Okay. And then secondly, so this structure that's on the screen right now, is that behind the Victorian or the single?
Behind the Victorian, behind the house.
What you actually did, and you rent the Victorian or you rent the smaller house?
We rent the smaller house. The Victorian is our house.
Well, right. And so I'm trying to think about the logic behind doing it the way that you did it.
The house on the left is our home.
Right. Okay.
That we live in. We rent the house on the right.
Yeah. So I had it wrong. So the house that's their color is on the other side.
Yes. Yep. Exactly. Yep.
Okay.
That we can open up the yard ultimately between them. You can see the really old garage tucked in the back a little bit right there.
For the issue here, the rental house is fine. It's got a garage. The issue is our house, which is not going to plan to age in place. Intention of I think and I'm the lawyer here, but I think we just bought our house being without a garage.
We bought it.
But we do have
reviving it.
I think you're right, Trevor.
Age in place, live there forever.
I have a question. When you say, though, that you're going to combine the properties, is your long-term intent to actually take down the rental property?
Essentially, yeah. That's, yeah.
Okay, so do you have a timeline with which you will do that to combine both
properties?
She said
potentially.
I've got kids that are still young,
yeah.
So it's like literally balancing the – I don't have to do timing on it because I've got kids that are young, thinking about college and various things,
and obviously
finances, so it's a wonderful place to rent at this place and an easy place to rent. So
okay.
I acknowledge that. But again, the notion of we built the new garage to match our house, showing the commitment of this is how long term we have. If you guys saw what the house originally looked like, if you remember it, like it looked very different. We redid the porch completely, renovated the porch to match what it should have looked like originally. We have put a lot of time and effort into this house, and we adore it. So we are not going anywhere.
But what you did was you developed a garage on a property that is not related to this house. So you really didn't match it up.
So this
has been an ongoing issue with the existing garage on the Victorian house, which you circumvented kind of the process by going and building the three-car garage on the rental, and now you're asking us to kind of separate these things out.
So there was a garage just to the right of our garage that was, depending on how you look at it, it was either slightly worse condition. That one, we had to take them both down. Both garages had to come down there. On the thought about putting one together, crossing the line, that wouldn't work. Talk. Tried to figure this out five different ways. House next door came up for sale. Already in it. Great opportunity. And we had to get rid of that garage. We decided to replace that garage. Now it doesn't make sense for us to.
The intent of, again, it's green space. That's what our goal is, green space. Mm-hmm. And sincerely never expected it to be a challenge to get more green space in River Forest.
Probably questions for the village attorney here. Is there's these conditions of approval, but one of them is shall not run with the title of the property. Why would we not want it run that whoever buys it will know and be on notice on title? These are conditions on. The only concern is I know Brian and the staff are overworked. So my fear is if they have to wait until they issue transfer stamps, I don't know if there's a real mechanism that's going to alert our staff to be able to make sure that before they issue the transfer stamps, they're going to make sure that these conditions are met. So, I'm always concerned about
the village inspection.
Village inspection?
Okay.
And who does that?
The village.
No, I know the village. Who in the village does the inspection? Okay.
So
our enforcement.
So they
Well, my fear is that, and I love my staff. I get it. They're your staff of the village. I get it. But, I've worked with government so many times that somehow something gets cracked, it falls through the cracks because someone, because of an unusual circumstance, I forgot about this, or no one triggers it. And so that's my fear. So I'd rather run with the title, with the property, so that whoever buys it is going to know these are the conditions, is my recommendation, unless you see that's a problem.
So is table setting the ZBA deadlock 3-3 on a recommendation? So it comes to you as not a recommendation to approve. As such, the ordinance that's in the packet has no recommended conditions because the ZBA doesn't make any recommendations when they don't recommend approval. So in discussing this matter with staff, I came up with some proposed conditions. So the board has a couple choices. You can give them the variation and let it run with title, and any owner of the Victorian house on the left will never have to put up a garage again, like any other house in River Forest, which needs a two-car garage. So if you want to do something other than that, if you want a garage to be built on this property someday, the question is what conditions will result in that happening at an appropriate time given the applicant's unique circumstances. If the variation runs with title, that means that all subsequent owners of it are benefited by the variation as well. However, if the variation is personal, it means that so long as the petitioners before you own it, they get the benefit of not having to build a garage. That all runs with the title means. It means who gets the benefit of it. So the idea is that if they say, well, we don't need a garage because we have this big one next door and we get to use it because we're leasing it, et cetera, then in my mind, the way to solve for this situation is so long as they own both properties, so long as they have a three-car garage available, then they get the benefit of not having to build another one. But if they want to sell the property, then they have to put up the garage that's required before they sell. And we can make that of public record by recording the ordinance on title so that a new owner or potential purchaser of their property gets a title commitment. On the title commitment is this ordinance approved in 2022. It has all these stipulations. The village also has a process for transfer stamps in which they can flag properties because of debts or special issues, and the village staff could flag this property that, hey, if we get a transfer stamp request for either of these two properties, make sure that there's compliance with this ordinance. Staff can operationalize that. That's where the proposed conditions come from. To answer your question?
Yes, it does, but it triggers another one. Let's assume that the ordinance is there and the ordinance goes on the test. Let's also assume that the staff does an oops during the and issue the transfer. And what happens to
them? They bought the property in violation of the zoning ordinance, and they could they have to build a garage. And if they don't, then you can file a zoning enforcement. It's also incumbent on the seller of properties to give disclosures of things like this to buyers, right? And when you sign a sales contract, you make representations, you know, about matters that touch on these.
That idea.
Nervous about the idea. No, and not because I'm against the conditions of the ordinance. I am concerned that.
Well, how else would you tighten it up?
I'm saying that to me, this doesn't give me the because it's really relying on human. Someone was to buy it with arguing, well, you didn't do what you were supposed to do.
But is the litigation with us, Greg, or is it with the sellers?
It's everyone gets named, including the title insurance companies, the attorneys for the buyer and seller that should have seen it. I mean, we've seen those cases play out.
Yeah.
So, so again, you know, as the petitioner is representing, is they want to be here for the long term. They want to age in place. They want green space. And so I think, you know, if all those conditions, and they're willing to live with the conditions that, you know, if for some reason they decide to move, they're responsible for building a garage, then, you know, I think that's, you know, I think it's kind of the best of both worlds.
They're either responsible for building a garage or they sell it with the disclosure that whoever buys it has to build one, and that has to get built into the purchase and sale price.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's, I'm just trying to avoid the litigation. God knows. Want to pay more than that. Absolutely. By the way, no reflection on you. No past problems that have. Not a lot of them. Thank you.
A title insurance policy would pick up the ordinance that's been recorded, and the new owners would take subject to it. So the new owners would be advised by the public recording of these requirements. An attorney representing the buyers on this deal would need to get a copy of the ordinance, review it carefully, and tell their clients what.
Is there any type of deadline by which a new owner would have to have that garage constructed, or just until you get cited? Or
The draft conditions that are before you is that prior to the transfer of the property, the owners have to build the garage. It would be done prior to transfer. That's what's
all
been
right.
proposed. Otherwise, if the village is in a position of being aware of a violation, it's in the village's, you know, the prosecutorial discretion. How much time?
go that route, which seems and the properties, does that?
So if you combine the properties and you own one property with a single-family home and a three-car garage, the variation is moot because you're in compliance with the zoning ordinance and no longer need the variation. This property should have its own PIN separate from the other one. And this ordinance would be recorded on title to the 138 Keystone.
To confirm, if they merge the properties, is that three-car garage sufficient then for the lot?
As long as there's one single-family home on the combined lot, then it would be. I don't believe the village would allow two single-family homes on a single lot of record because you can only have one principal building per lot.
So it seems like we're around these conditions, and there are things that I think you've all talked about.
Vote go, because we've got pending motion.
We'll amend the vote, excuse me.
And the motion.
To include these following.
Can I, would you like me to read those, President Ducey?
Yeah, okay. Please.
Yeah, so that the following conditions of approval would be, would apply to the variation granted in the ordinance. A, the variation is personal to the petitioner and shall not run with title to the property. B, prior to transfer of the property from the petitioner to another owner, petitioner shall build a two-car or larger garage on the property. C, the village shall not issue a transfer stamp for the conveyance of the property until and unless a two-car or larger garage is built.
Move to amend this motion with the
.138 is that blue?
Yes, so Victoria.
I'll understand that.
For clarification, they haven't seen this yet? I mean, are we?
Yeah, no, I think they've talked about it.
Yeah, these are all circled around.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I think we just finally put them in writing. We just read it. You're more than welcome.
Take it.
I mean, it's everything you've...
I'm not a lawyer, so what am I going to do with it?
Yeah, neither am I. So. I don't think there's anything that you haven't already talked about. Okay, so with the ordinance amended, the motion amended by Trustee and Trustee Gillis, if there's no further the trustees did, because it was a nay vote at the zoning, it needs
four of the trustees.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Faulkner.
Yes.
O'Connell.
Yes.
Johnson.
Yes.
Awesome. All right. Congratulations and good luck to you.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Thanks. Moving on. Let's go on to new business. Oh my gosh. Yeah, sorry. We talked so long.
Yeah.
My apologies. 27A3. I can get a motion.
I'd like to make a motion to approve an ordinance amending the River Forest zoning ordinance regarding regulation of solar energy collection systems.
Second.
Okay.
Back in April, the Sustainability Commission brought forward an item to the Village Board, direction to petition for zoning amendment regarding solar energy collection systems. The intent really to kind of explicitly state some rules in our Village Code regarding those types of systems, and part of the reason for that is that a
zoning letter would be to be submitted, showing that submitted as of right in most districts. Zoning amendments at two different public hearings for the Zoning Board of Appeals to achieve that. There's regulations for ground-mounted and amendments to the land use chart that makes mounted systems permitted as of right in every zoning district. A special use permit would be required for any ground mounted.
Matt, I have a question.
Yep.
And it might have been in the material and I might have missed it. What about multi-family dwellings, condos, townhomes?
So it would, roof-mounted systems on those buildings would still be permitted.
Okay, it's not. This is not just for single-family homes.
Correct. Every zoning district and commercial buildings, as long as it meets the requirements spelled out in Chapter 7 and being flushed.
Do we have any buildings right now who wouldn't meet this? No.
Well, there's a lot of roofs in River Forest that aren't appropriate for solar in terms of their constructed eaves and all of that, and also the materials like slate tile roofs are very difficult. And then I think also years ago, before the Sustainability Commission was created, and we were doing this work out of the Park District Foundation, we looked at whether we could put solar on the depot. And it was determined that that was too close to the train, and the reverberations of the train could, from the tracks, could impact ability to put solar on that. So there's all sorts of different reasons why solar panels aren't appropriate for different types of roofs.
I'm sorry. I suppose when I had answered, and I think as Matt had answered, is there was nothing in the ordinance that was precluding it, right? There are structural issues, of course, that could play into it.
You understood that? Okay, I missed it. All right. Any other questions? To get to Soul Smart Silver designation, so this is a okay. So I'd ask them.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Bochner.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
We'll move on to a now new business. 9A, minor amendment. So if I can get a motion in a second.
Move to direct the village administrator to process a minor amendment to the plan development for Priory Park for the installation of ornamental fencing at the William Street entrance.
Thank you. The Park District would normally have sent a representative this evening. However, they also have a board meeting tonight, so they apologize that they're not here. They are looking to install a 40-foot section of anodized aluminum powder-coated black fencing that looks much like the wrought iron material that you see elsewhere in the community to the entrance at William Street. It is a 40-foot long section that runs north from the existing park sign, and it will be set back 9 feet from the
All right. Questions regarding this?
So just as far as the fence, obviously I'm familiar with that area and Kathy, but is it talking pass through or how, what are we looking at?
Right. So it's actually to discourage pedestrians from cutting across the lawn area that they have. So it'll direct you to the actual pathway that's on the south side of the where the fence will be located.
You know, there used to be two paths. Without, you know, to the path, kids, another path.
Okay.
And trying to make that dirt path now. So in order to ensure that people use the path, that will be where the fence is. So it will kind of go from Brander's house to
path, okay,
the actual cement
like
path.
The here. Middle.
Yeah.
When you
yeah.
enter, it'll be
yeah.
on the. How are we getting
oh,
in
you,
the
path.
Oh, no, the path will
there's
be
a
open.
Path right there.
Oh, okay.
So
there's
path,
no gate on the
which
path.
Is next.
Right, but it's open.
Yeah, there's a path.
Mm-hmm.
So there won't be a gate across the path.
Gateway.
Yeah, it'll be over by from the Branders to. Yep. Open.
Path will, there's no impedance to any traffic going along the path.
Right.
Yeah.
The right. There's a fence from the post going north, the pathway will stay. Correct.
Can you repeat that again? No.
I don't think it's going to be a big fence. It's just going to be a nice decorative fence.
Where's the picture? That's
I was actually hoping that in the packet we'd have some image of the fence because one thing that I was wanting to see was if the top of the fence was going to be flush or spikes.
Right, it's on page 196 and there's no
do.
it's flush. It's on page 196 in the
match. Oh, it is
yeah.
in there.
It's going to match all the others.
But it's not in color though.
Thank you.
This doesn't have to do with the it does have to do with that. There's no crosswalk there, and I've always wondered why.
Hey, that's a great question. It is a great question.
We will gladly look into that question.
Study.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It was safe. Chef. Oh no.
I
don't think so. Reason why we did. All right, get through that. All right, very good. So we'll take a.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Bachner.
Yes.
O'Connell.
Yes.
Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Okay, up next is in our building code, a motion and a second. In our building code.
Motion to approve.
Title IV of the River Forest Village Code regarding building codes applicable in the Village of River Forest with additional edits presented by village staff today, September 12th, 2022.
Second.
So this has been before you more previous to tonight. I don't know if any of you recall, but last fall there were a couple of presentations wherein staff discussed this proposed ordinance update. I won't go through all of that again since we already have on multiple occasions, but the gist of it is that we're just simply looking to update the building codes from 2003 version to a 2018 version. The language that's in the packet here this evening, which I've reiterated on the memo, which is now somewhat of a lie, is all the same as what you saw last year, with the exception of those kind of 50%, 90% changes that we talked about or that you saw today. Ironically, the change, those red lines that you saw today are to revert back to what we currently have in place. So this was all a big way of going back to where we started relative to those minor revisions. So with that being said, we're really just still trying to maintain the local amendments that we've, you know, had for a very long time, but bring our general building ordinance requirements up to a more up-to-date version, obviously. I know at the last meeting, some of the things that were discussed were how is this going to specifically impact different types of development. So one of the things that we did was we worked with our plan review consultant to look at three random typical developments that we see here in town. We took a new construction of a single family residence, a single family residential addition slash remodel, and a commercial interior renovation. And we see quite a few of those kind of silos of development here in town. You can see the comments that they generate. Obviously, the new construction has a lot more kind of changes based on this proposed ordinance. That makes sense, right? It's new construction. We want that. It's going to be around longer. We want that to be as up to snuff as we can make it. The addition slash remodel permit for residents had some comments, but really not a ton of substance there that would drive costs through the roof. And then the commercial renovation, there were no comments. So the commercial renovation that we happened to look at, the development that they had proposed and the revisions that they had made already met the 2018 ordinance changes. I asked one of our staff members to look at the comments that were generated and what that would kind of translate to in terms of cost. And on both the new construction and the residential addition permit, it was in the ballpark of, you know, $3,000 to $5,000. So nothing egregious when considering the fact that our building code is kind of coming forward 15 years into the present day. So that was slightly comforting. It's not nothing. It is a good chunk of money, but considering the change that we're proposing here, it seems somewhat reasonable to me. That's the gist of it. We've presented, obviously, last year and then through various reasons, this kind of final effort to adopt the ordinance itself had fallen through, but we notified the state so we don't have to go back or have a 30-day waiting period anymore. We've ticked that box, so it's really just whether or not we want to update this ordinance and approve it. We've got several experts in the room in case we have any questions, and just looking for, you know, hopefully any questions that you have that we can answer or approval of this ordinance here this evening. So with that, I will open it up to you all.
Be off topic, but not address anything with
the monitoring that. Oh, as far as like, there's nothing of that in this ordinance.
Okay.
Obviously, their internal sprinkler system.
Yeah, I am.
Certainly. Thank you.
Unless there's any further questions?
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
The next one is an amendment of our village code regarding fees for building permit extension.
Boom. Move to approve an ordinance amending section 4-2-1 of the River Forest Village Code regarding fees for building permit extensions.
Second.
Thank you.
Thank you. Included in the packet, obviously, is the proposed an ordinance amendment that changes the fee structure that we charge for non-single-family residential units. Currently, the way that we are structured is on single-family homes and on commercial properties. After the building permit, initial building permit expires, I'm allowed to give extensions on those permits. Those extensions are charged one-third of the overall cost of the original fee for the three-month extension. When reviewing our business practices, however, on our single-family residential and on our commercial properties, we already have a very generous schedule that we provide to our contractors. The International Code Council, the ICC code that we are just discussing, has a one-year building permit timeline, at which point the permit expires and you would then need to file for a new application. Ours range between 15 and 18 months, and under PUDs, we can give even a longer period of time as we choose to on our own. So as we were taking a look at what our business process is here, it made good sense that on commercial and non-single-family residential developments, that we look at a different way to be able to manage those fee structures to make sure that we properly and effectively keep projects moving forward. It's still we are still very much a very business-friendly place as an organization. When you take a look at not only our permitting schedules, but also, as you saw tonight, we're now moving up to the 2018 code. The standard actually is there's a 2021 code. We also do carve-outs on sprinklers. We also do some other various carve-outs to make ourselves very friendly. This is a very responsive and responsible approach to addressing that. Being also that, with that being said, I want you to know we are looking at a much larger comprehensive review of our overall fee structure, as was discussed last year during budget time. We're currently reviewing a proposal to get that project moving forward, but much more timely and met very well with what we were discussing earlier.
I heard you regarding the first extension and the second service, the third extension, and what happens then?
Currently, the way that our rules are written is I'm allowed to give out two extensions. That then they have to reapply for the entire. Now, that being said, under PUDs, I'm not allowed to grant any extension.
Prudent thing to do. Mm-hmm.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes. Very good. So no executive session. So if I can. So we'll get a motion.
Motion to adjourn.
Okay.
Second.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
President Adusi.
Yes.
Meeting adjourned.
I'm going to say no. Huh?